Part 1. The Divided Brain. Chapter 1. Asymmetry and the Brain. The topic of the difference between the hemispheres, their fundamental asymmetry, has fascinated people for a very long time indeed. In fact, speculation on the subject goes back more than two millennia. Greek physicians in the 3rd century BC held that the right hemisphere was specialized for perception and the left hemisphere for understanding, which, if nothing else, shows a remarkably interesting train of thought. In more modern times, the physician Arthur Wigan published his thoughtful study, The Duality of the Mind, in 1844, prompted by his fascination with a handful of cases he stumbled across where an individual who had remained apparently unremarkable in life was found at post-mortem to have one cerebral hemisphere destroyed by disease. Over a period of 20 years, Wigan collected further instances, concluding that each hemisphere on its own could support human consciousness, and that therefore we must have two minds with two brains, with mental disease resulting when they are in conflict. But he did not make any suggestions as to how they differed, and appears to have assumed that they are largely interchangeable, a sort of belt and braces approach by evolution to the possibility of one hemisphere being irremediably damaged. Why two hemispheres? That leads us to a good first question. Why are there two cerebral hemispheres at all? After all, there is no necessity for an organ whose entire function, as it is commonly understood, is to make connections, to have this almost wholly divided structure. Over the course of the long evolution of Homo sapiens, there could have been developments towards a unified brain, which might, on the face of it, offer enormous advantages. It is true that the brain's embryological origins lie in two distinct halves. But this cannot be the answer, not only because earlier still, the primitive hemispheres themselves arise from a single midline structure, the prosencephalon, at about 5 weeks gestation, but because midline structures and connections between the halves of the brain do develop later in fetal development at some levels, even though the hemispheres themselves remain deeply divided. And the cranium which encases the brain starts off, embryologically speaking, in several pieces on either side of the brain, but ends as a fused whole. So why not the brain itself? Instead, what we see is a tendency positively to enhance the anatomical separation. For a long time, the function of the corpus callosum, the main band of neural tissue that connects the two hemispheres at their base, was unknown. At one stage, it was believed to be no more than a kind of bolster, a supportive structure that stopped the two hemispheres from sagging. Now we know that it is there to allow the hemispheres to communicate. But in what sense? What is the communication like? The corpus callosum contains an estimated 300 to 800 million fibers connecting topologically similar areas in either hemisphere. Yet only 2% of cortical neurons are connected by this tract. What is more, the main purpose of a large number of these connections is actually to inhibit, in other words, to stop the other hemisphere interfering. Neurons can have excitatory or inhibitory action, excitatory neurons causing further neuronal activity downstream, while inhibitory neurons suppress it. Although the majority of cells projecting to the corpus callosum use the facilitatory neurotransmitter glutamate and are excitatory, there are significant populations of nerve cells, those that use the neurotransmitter gamma-aminobutyric acid, or GABA for short, whose function is inhibitory. Even the excitatory fibers often terminate on intermediary neurons or interneurons, whose function is inhibitory. Inhibition is, of course, not a straightforward concept. Inhibition at the neurophysiological level does not necessarily equate with inhibition at the functional level, any more than letting your foot off the brake pedal causes the car to halt. Neural inhibition may set in train a sequence of activity so that the net result is functionally permissive. But the evidence is that the primary effect of callosal transmission is to produce functional inhibition. So much is this the case that a number of neuroscientists have proposed that the whole point of the corpus callosum is to allow one hemisphere to inhibit the other. Stimulation of neurons in one hemisphere